What if space were hell and hell were horny? You'd have Event Horizon, which I chose for this week's episode, even though it was not the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
In America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. My co-hosts aren't NPCs. They're player characters that were good enough at the game that they beat it before The Rock showed up. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Boop-a-de-boop.
And Camila Adams.
Well, my one friend Miles, he told me to say hello.
Best bit in the movie.
Other than punching an ostrich in the face.
Yes.
Yes, correct.
Jumanji, the Next Level, 53 and two-thirds. That is our second highest Dwayne Johnson vehicle. Fate of the Furious is a 70. And I double-checked because I can't remember which is which. That is one of the Rock-heavy Furiouses.
Nice.
Followed by Jumanji. Then there's a big drop to The Scorpion King at 27 Woof. And two-thirds. Oh, yeah. And The Game Plan at 17 and two-thirds.
Ouch.
He's just all over the place, this guy.
There's no consistency.
But I'm dying to find out, since I had however many bingos is required for me to pick a movie that isn't even Anomia, and through a selection process landed on 1997 space horror Event Horizon, and I just want to know how you're both feeling now.
I don't know. There's just a giant question mark. Like, it's not, it's not bad. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm going to need the whole episode to like work through how I feel about it or not. Like, just trying to figure it out. Cause I know the end got wild. So, and I appreciate it for that.
Oh yeah.
I appreciate that.
I had to talk in therapy about anticipating watching this movie.
Oh my gosh. Now, I'm sorry.
Is that just based on what Sean had said about it, or did you do some research?
I had seen it in middle school.
Okay.
I had pretty vivid memories of it, which turned out to be largely false. My memory of this movie was that it was like about suicide.
Oh.
And it more has mentions of suicide.
Right.
I think I was maybe conflating it with Solaris, or at least the Soderbergh remake, which I've never seen the original, because I was like, yeah, so you go to the edge of a black hole and you go insane and you have to kill yourself to get out of it. And this allows him to come to terms with the death of, or his wife's death by suicide.
Oh.
That's not what this movie is about. I do, to be fully honest, I struggle with suicidality and I always have. And so I was very like, this movie is going to be triggering for me. Mm. And then it was totally okay.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm glad that worked out for you. I'm sorry that you had so much.
Shout out to my therapist.
Yeah, sorry you had so much anxiety going into it.
You know, if you had said that, I would have said, we'll watch something else, right?
Well, like, it was fine. And I literally thought about, and I heard on the recording that I was about to ask when you were like talking, you were giving us like vague trigger warnings. Mm. I was about to be like, does it either have to do with dead parents or suicide? I don't know how you would have answered that question because my memory was false, right? It mentioned suicide. Yeah.
I would have said no and also been wrong because like,
oh,
yeah, that's in there, but it's so not the main point of Event Horizon that I would have forgotten that it was a plot point.
Right.
So regardless, I fell asleep during this movie twice.
Same.
That's more about jet lag than I think the quality of the film.
Not my.
I really do think that. Camila does not have
not
that.
My experience.
I'm like, we're going to have to talk about this. I'm not coming in with a score for this movie. We need to talk it out.
Yeah, I'm really like flouncing back and forth. Because like I said last time, I did see this in the theater. I don't know why I saw it in the theater. And I didn't have any memory. So this is like brand new to me. It must have been like, it's 97. So it must have been like dating. Like it must have been a date movie for me at that point.
What hell of a date movie.
And my prior experience, I alluded to this last week. My prior experience with this movie was I was not at all popular in middle school or high school. Like I was not one of the cool kids in any way, shape or form. I somehow ended up at one of the cool kids' house one afternoon. I think like a friend of mine was dating him or something like that. I'm at this kid Brett's house trying to watch this movie and keep it cool.
Do you feel you succeeded? Yeah.
No, absolutely not. Listen, that was the last time I was ever in his finished basement.
Here's why I chose this. And I had to rewatch it to, you know, remind myself. Part of it is just, man, I love a 90s movie that goes so much farther and so much harder than anyone anticipated it was going to go. Right. But I really like cosmic horror as a genre. Cosmic horror is a distinct term from space horror. Cosmic horror generally just refers to horror where the threat is like unknowable. Right.
The infinite.
Right. The scary thing is almost impossible to describe or certainly render. And I like it more in writing because it's almost impossible to do on film. Right. Because it's how do you, you know, more schlocky stuff kind of gets around it sometimes. Like Hellraiser is kind of there. Everyone says they love H.P. Lovecraft. No one really does. And why are you saying that? He's a crazy old racist. Like, you don't
need
to
say super racist.
Right.
What's that one with Sam Neill that maybe is a Carpenter movie?
Jacob's Ladder? No.
In the Mouth of Madness.
That's the other one. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one, but it should be on my list.
You need to watch that tonight.
Yeah. That seems like it's right up your alley.
But in terms of like true cosmic horror that works, it's pretty much this and Annihilation in my experience, right? Mm. And this... Annihilation is probably a better movie, but in terms of like building up a threat of a thing that's will immediately drive you to madness in horrible ways that we can't even describe, showing us just enough of that to make us get it and then paying that off, I don't know that there's a better example. I think this just really does a thing that's almost impossible to do very well.
Yeah. Okay. I feel you.
And Samuel is based... Sam Neill is basically Jurassic Park again. So that's fun too.
And also in The Mouth of Madness again, which is Carpenter. Mm. Seriously, you got to watch it tonight.
I forgot it was my recap. Let's see what happens.
This was one of the things I was kind of depending on for my score. I got to be honest.
Your recap.
Yes, because I'm not 100%. By the way, I just killed a little fly. I'm very proud of myself.
Way to go, Miyagi.
No, because there are things about the plot of this where I go, wait, what?
Yeah.
I think it's simpler than you think.
Okay.
But let's see if I'm right by testing my ability to riff a description of it.
All right, go.
So Sam Neill gets on board this rescue ship. Everyone on the rescue ship really wants to go home. It's time for them to go home. He says, nope, actually what happened was there was this ship that we made that we thought could do interdimensional travel, and we sent it to Neptune and then it disappeared. And we told you all that it had just crashed and everyone was dead. Actually, it just disappeared. Guess what? It's back. We have to go and see if there's anybody alive on it and tow it home to figure out what the hell happened. The crew is grumpy, but they go to Neptune and they find the ship and they get on the ship, and in the first 5 minutes, one of the guys gets sucked into the gravity drive, and when it spits him back out again, it does an energy thing that disables their original ship. So now they're stuck on a weird ship that they're increasingly believing is alive or haunted or possessed or something while they're trying to repair their original ship and go home. Unfortunately, it turns out that where the ship went in that 7 years was another dimension that's basically hell. The original crew all immediately suddenly went mad and both fucked and murdered each other to death and goo all of a sudden. There are remnants of this around the ship, and now the ship is giving the new people hallucinations and basically making them picture the worst things that exist in their minds in the hopes of getting them to put it back into the hell dimension. Admittedly, that part's a little unclear. Sam Neill fully goes crazy and starts acting for the ship, dies and comes back several times in an attempt to suck the remaining crew members and the ship into the hell dimension, but at the last minute, Lawrence Fishburne sacrifices himself to get a few crew members onto the escape pod and sent home. The ship goes back into the hell dimension, so everybody wins.
It was like 2 minutes. But
I was going to say, yeah, definitely sorry. Over.
But I appreciate, helpful. Yeah, okay. I think I must have missed the orgy part.
Well,
a lot of the hell dimension stuff, it happened.
Okay, all right. Mm.
More on that in the Faxi segment. Mm. But the one thing that I do think is unclear is, what does the ship want?
Yeah.
I think the ship wants to go back to hell.
That was new information to me based in your recap.
I don't know why it can't go on its own or why it came back to our dimension in the first place. But like, clearly, at least when Sam Neill fully loses his mind and starts working for the ship, his objective is to take it and these other people back to the place it was before.
So. Is it just a matter of collecting souls? Like, does the ship really care? Does it want to be empty, or does it want the people on there, or does it matter?
It seems to want them to have a bloody orgy until they're all dead and goo.
Like,
that seems
out.
To be its, yeah, it seems to be its desire.
Eye removal heavily featured in this.
Yeah, like, why? Yeah. And then the whole line of like where we're going, we don't need eyes. It was Back to the Future.
Mary Beth really enjoyed that one.
The line where I was like, I don't know about all this, was when Sam Neill gets pulled out of the airlock and then just shows up again. And he said, the ship wants me back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, second draft.
This was very Hellraiser meets Star Trek. Is what I was thinking of. Like, I got a lot of Hellraiser vibes from the whole thing.
That was one of the stated influences. And in fact, the gravity drive is loosely modeled after the puzzle box from Hellraiser.
Got it. Oh. That makes sense. That makes sense.
It was supposed to have an effect where all of those spiky things on the wall, when it, like, did its alignment mode, the spiky things would like shoot into it, but they ran out of budget, why we have Chekhov's wall full of spikes and yet no one ever gets spiked.
Speaking of influence, how much did the Wachowskis love this movie?
I mean, it's about the same time, right? And Lawrence Fishburne is kind of doing the same thing.
Right.
And that time was August 15th of 1997. Event Horizon was released. It debuted in fourth. The winner that weekend was the debuting Copland, $13.5 million. Then week four of Air Force One, $12.3 million. Week two of Conspiracy Theory, $12.3 million. Event Horizon debuting in fourth with $9.5 million. It did not get much better from there. It went down to seventh in its second weekend at $4.3 million. Although it did manage to beat the debuting live-action Leave It to Beaver. So,
so there's that, job. You know, little wins.
Do I mean that, or did I mean to write the live-action Dennis the Menace?
What did you say?
Leave It to Beaver. Leave
It to Beaver is live action. You probably meant Dennis the Menace, and I heard Dennis the Menace. But you said
Dennis the Menace was also a live action TV show back in the day, because I only know this because the actor who played Dennis died and was in the SAG necrology, and my father-in-law went, oh, Dennis the Menace died.
Yeah, but it was also the cartoon.
So yes.
Leave It to Beaver was never a cartoon that I...
No, I didn't make that up. There was a Leave It to Beaver movie in the theaters in 1997.
Listen, that Flintstones movie happened, and
everyone
the
was
Bunch
just
movie
like,
happened.
Bet.
Exactly.
And my mom was like, really really loved Leave It to Beaver. And again, like, it's kind of similar to your story about Dennis the Menace. Mom was like, Jerry Mathers was a big deal for her.
Well, it lost to week two of Event Horizon, so that's why we don't remember it existing. By week three, Event Horizon was out of the top 10, finished 11th place over Labor Day weekend, only made $26.6 million. 77th place for 1997, beaten by the likes of Home Alone 3, Fools Rush In, and The Little Mermaid. I mean, The Little Mermaid from the 80s. That made more money in 1997 than
Event
Horizon
going
did.
To see that with a friend and his daughter.
Yep.
Cute.
Came back out. And yeah, so not a hit. It was, however, a big home hit, including for Robin in that guy's finished basement. Particularly on the relatively new medium of DVD. This was a big hit in early DVD.
Oh, wow.
To the point where Paramount wanted Paul W.S. Anderson to do a director's cut. It sold so many DVDs, and they had cut so much. The original cut of this movie was 130 minutes long.
That, I was so sure watching this movie. I was like, there's no way.
They came into this thinking that it was 90
minutes of deleted scenes.
Yeah, and I looked something, I saw something very interesting about that.
What's that?
It's not in your Faxy segment? About the lost footage?
It might be.
About the lost footage?
That there's a lot of lost footage. Yeah. It's so they wanted this. No one wanted the 130 minute version. Paul W. Sanderson said it wasn't good. It needed more editing. There was a lot that didn't need to be there. But because there was this late interest, they wanted him to do more, and they just couldn't find a lot of the footage. Some of it had been lost. Some of it had not been properly preserved.
Dang.
It had done really poorly in test screenings. There were test screenings of that long version, but a big part of the problem was it was so gory that allegedly people were fainting. And especially the bloody orgy went on forever.
Oh, my God.
And was very explicit to the point where, so that they could have people look dismembered, they hired a bunch of amputees to be stand-ins. And so that they could have the sex look great, they just got porno actors to have sex. That is all in some cut somewhere.
Amputee porno actors.
Yes.
I think there were two different categories.
Some BDSM performers were also included in that, or that were hired.
This is Paul W.S. Anderson, because he's just credited as Paul Anderson, I thought he was a secret third thing.
No.
Okay.
This is
the Resident Evil series.
Mila Jovovich's husband.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. It's that guy. Allegedly, someone found a VHS of the long cut at some point, but they're both like, we haven't watched it yet. Anyway.
Sure. Wasn't the thing that I read that the footage was stored in a salt mine? And
that's not wise.
That's but apparently that's what I think that's what, according to where I got this from, that's what they did. Paramount had a salt mine because of temperature, were my notes. Well, and unironically, Transylvanian salt mine, a common practice for film archiving due to stable temperatures. So that's where this was, but it got fucked up.
No, there are mines near here that have original prints and original soundmasters in them for that reason. The original print of Gone with the Wind is within a 2-hour drive of us right now in a mine.
Really?
Somewhere to the north.
Wow.
Yeah. Today I learned.
Yeah. That's a normal thing, but they're not supposed to get salty.
Yeah.
And it sounded like somebody, that happened here.
Like somebody didn't close the can properly or something.
Many of the problems, don't get me wrong, there are problems. Many of them revolved around an incredibly accelerated editing schedule and post-production schedule. You won't believe why. By spring of 1997, it had become clear that James Cameron was not going to have Titanic done in time to meet its July 2nd release date. They wanted July 25th. Harrison Ford said he would never work for Paramount again if they put Titanic on top of the Air Force One release window. So then they move Titanic to December, but need a summer movie. So they're like, buddy, get Event Horizon done now. So the reason why this is kind of a mess is because Titanic wasn't ready. Yes.
Damn it, James.
I mean, I would rather have a messy Event Horizon and a pretty perfect Titanic than the other way around.
Agreed.
But yeah.
I'm not sure this movie has a perfect version. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no.
You know how sometimes you watch a movie And we'll talk about this and You Can't Handle the Truth. You watch a movie and you go, God, this is so close to being perfect. And I kind of resent it for not quite being there. With this movie, I'm like, oh, this is a big old mess. I don't really see a world in which this is not a big old mess. Therefore, I'm going to enjoy it as much as I can in the state sense.
Yeah. Like, I like that. First of all, I like recognizing that Sean Pertwee is in this. Very young Alfred from Gotham, from TV's Gotham or whatever.
That was who that is?
I know. And yes, he was always a but it also seemed weird to me casting-wise that they would bring in Jacob Isaacs. Because they look very similar.
Jason Isaac?
Jason, is that, yeah, Jason.
Whoever that guy exactly. is. They do look similar, and I did confuse them because they have the same vibes also.
It's like, this is the same, this is the, either one of, both of them should be up for the same role. Anytime that there is whatever role, this is the, these are the guys that come in.
I also appreciated Jack Noseworthy from Dead at 21, the MTV series. Anyone remember that?
Yes. I never knew his real name.
I had a big crush on him.
I just appreciate the name Jack Noseworthy. Right? That's an A-plus name. Go ahead, Robin.
I was going to say, also, I really liked Academy Award nominee Kathleen Quinlan in this film. I can't really think of too many movies that I've seen her in. And I was like, all right.
Oh, no, it's got a great cast.
Yeah.
It's kind of top to bottom. Mm. And I love a cast that's like, there are 10 people in this movie. We don't have extras. We don't have these guys and only these guys. This was written originally by Philip Eisner. This is one of only a few things he'd ever done. But that Jason Momoa movie they made in Pittsburgh is another one, Sweet Girl, where Jason Momoa jumps off the stadium. He had been trying to get this developed for a while, but it was basically just an Alien ripoff. Like, this is almost just an Alien ripoff. His version had tentacle monsters in it. His version was really just an Alien ripoff.
That's funny, because Dan said that, like, when the swirly chairs... Dan was like, why is this wannabe alien so bad? Like, it's just... And my thought going in was like, are all space movies just about going in to save another crew that fucked up?
I mean, a lot of them. So Paul W.S. Anderson did an extensive rewrite. He brought the whole hell business into it. That was not in the original script. Basically made it... He liked that it felt like a haunted house movie in space, but instead of having that lead to Alien, he, you know, took it in a, to me, much more interesting direction. And then it was script doctored, not written, that's correcting from last time. This was not written by Andrew Kevin Walker, who wrote Seven and Psycho Killer, which we talked about last time. This was script doctored by him. He's probably best as a script doctor. Seven is obviously very good, but the four things we know he script doctored are Fight Club, The Game, Event Horizon, and Stir of Echoes.
Oh, wow.
So he's like really good at making a thing work. In case you were wondering, this is not the first movie where a paper is folded in half and then a pencil is poked through it to illustrate what a wormhole is. No.
That seems to happen quite a bit.
I figured this was the first one.
I wondered, but it's usually credited to the book A Wrinkle in Time. Apparently that is basically described in the book A Wrinkle in Time. Something very similar happens in an early Star Trek episode.
I think so there's even an illustration in A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah. So this is not original to here, but it's really similar to the way they do it in Interstellar. So
and Thor,
give it whatever credit you want.
Or the love of thunder or whatever.
Listen, they're referencing actual theoretical physics, so there's only so many ways to illustrate that.
And surprisingly, the only true related media to this are a couple of limited comic book series. There has not been a sequel. There has been talk at various points, but it never really got going. Allegedly, there's a TV series in development. It's been in development for at least about 5 years. Adam Wingard, who did the last couple of Godzilla movies, was supposed to be doing an Event Horizon series, but I don't know if you can take this.
It doesn't feel
out
like
of the
it. '90s, or even just out of the film. Like, it, I don't know. And I think it's too much to drag on for 8 episodes.
I mean, part of why I love it is because it's so short and jarring, right?
Yeah.
Like, Yeah, we build up for an hour and there's a good, you know, there's a, for me, there's a good building of the tension and what's going to happen. And kind of like the first few hallucinations and even like the business with the kid in the airlock is like,
gross.
That's like 30 minutes in, right?
Yeah, that was like,
that doesn't take very long to get to that.
Yeah. No, but even that like feels like tease. And then we snap our fingers and everything's gone batshit. I like that structure and I like it only taking 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Also like that this movie was roughly 90 minutes long because I only had to spend 90 minutes with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So am I to understand, because if it, okay, the hell part of it. So is the hell, is this, it's not necessarily you die and then they take you to hell. It's that hell is just, you can be alive and we're just going to pick you up and plop you over into it. Is that?
I think we're calling it hell because that's the appropriate word. But I think that more literally, they went to another dimension where the rules of physics and reality are so different that everyone immediately goes violently insane.
Gotcha.
Like Buffy.
Okay. Okay.
And that's awesome, right? I don't know. Maybe just for me.
I mean, well, they definitely... You know, going back to the suicide thing, like it pulls on trauma unique to you,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. Sam Neill's character sees his wife's suicide. Lawrence Fishburne's character sees someone who he had to let die to save other people. Jack Nosworthy's character talks about, like, I can't be around the dark me. So we don't know what the dark me did, right?
Right.
But, you know. I do think that it's your own personal hell more so than just the
place of
psychic
horror.
Squid monster from Watchmen, right?
That silence
awkward
was...
Silence.
We had an awkward silence and Camille and Robin were both staring at the camera and I felt like they were both simultaneously deciding, yeah, we're not happy you chose this, Sean. I feel like that landed for both of them at the same moment.
I cannot tell you how many times I thought, I'm glad I'm not watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I'm not happy
like
about
every
this
every 6 minutes.
Right. This isn't like, you know, I'm not like, oh my God, I'm worse off for watching this movie. I have no ill intentions towards this movie. I don't hate it. And it's not like, ugh, what a waste of 90 minutes. No, it's definitely not that.
Absolutely not. And also, I'm glad that I now know that it's not the same movie as Solaris.
But I want to shout out to Sam Neill, his transformation, because that was that was pretty great. Because I was the way that Lawrence Fishburne was acting or his behavior, I was like, oh, he's definitely going to end up being the bad guy. So I didn't really see Sam Neill coming, even though I apparently had seen this movie before.
I remembered Sam Neill taking his eyes out, so I knew that things weren't going to go great for him.
No memory of that whatsoever.
He gets them right back. They're out for like 20 minutes. No, I, you know, for the fact that I'm generally uninterested in male characters in films, not always.
Relatable content.
I like Westerns, but in, right. in your average film, I like Westerns in Sad Space. That's where I want to see men. And this is Sad Space adjacent, yeah. But like Sam Neill and Lawrence Fishburne is such a good manliness combo.
It is.
Like I could just watch them like be politely mad at each other all
right?
day. Like we hate each other and we're making it clear, but in a very civil way.
Exactly.
Like that's.
HR is paying attention, so we must.
Right. And Sam Neill is so, like, I love his explaining what the hell happened speech. I love that it comes after they're already at Neptune, because that kind of, like, at first I was like, why didn't they say this on the ground? And then I'm like, because no one would have gone.
Right.
Like, it actually works. And his final villain speech is so good. Like, he's so good at sinking his teeth into the villain speech.
Mm-hmm.
He's just great in this.
I do love how when shit goes awry and Lawrence Fishburne is immediately like, get me the fuck out of here. I need to leave now. Mm-hmm. It's time to go.
Get out.
Where he's like, not only am I leaving this, I'm blowing it up as soon as I can.
Right.
Like, Smart guy.
I also am glad there are survivors, even though it's, what, mm-hmm. like two people. I'm still glad.
What I kind of thought was going to end up happening was that it was going to be like this loop. Like when the people who came to see their ship or who came to rescue them was going to be them. Like this was like some, that's what I, where I thought it was going. But no, I would have given it a higher score had it.
That, I agree.
There's also just a lot of things shaped like dicks, must be pointed out. The Lewis and Clark literally fucks the Event Horizon. There's like a light switch that's a dick for no reason. This is a horny movie. Everyone like getting down to their little tight underwear to go into stasis. Yeah. Horny movie.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jolie Richardson.
Yeah, Nip Tuck.
Yeah, I kind of forgot she existed, and I thought she was great in this.
Yeah, I don't. Was she like Vanessa Redgrave's daughter?
Correct.
Yeah, like I never really liked her on Nip Tuck as a quote unquote actress. But this, she is tolerable, and I don't know if I just hated her character or what, but she's tolerable in this film. And there's something else that I've seen her in as. I can't remember what it was, but something recent she's been in, and she was also maybe The Gentleman, the show on Netflix. But she's good,
and she was quite naked in the beginning of this film.
Yes.
Regarding the Event Horizon, if you are going to make a ship with a top secret black hole generating thing, maybe don't give it a name associated with black holes.
Right. We're gonna call this the Kitten Caboodle. That's where we're going, guys. Everybody aboard. It's nothing nefarious here.
No, the opening, good opening crawl. Like we get an opening crawl that sets up the world in the perfect 90s font. I think that the beginning of this movie sells it much better than the trailer.
This morning, TDRS picked up an automated navigation beacon.
This is incredible. It's the Event Horizon. She's come back. After 7 years in deep space.
18 people on board this ship when it disappeared. I want them all accounted for.
Opening outer door.
It came back, abandoned.
Any crew?
Negative.
This place is a tomb.
But it didn't come back.
Boundaries of our universe.
What is that?
The ship is reacting to us, and the reactions are getting stronger.
What are you telling me? That this ship is alive?
I have such one thing to show you.
Oh my God!
It knows my secrets. It knows my fears.
I can't believe she won't let you.
The trailer is fine.
Yeah. So 90s.
It is.
I definitely see why this didn't sell a lot of tickets.
Right.
Yeah.
But you're right. That opening crawl is like, at one point, it was just like 2035. Everything is fucked. Like, there was.
It's 2047 because it was 50 years in the future, which is like the sweet spot of sci-fi movies. Wild to think about it. We were closer to 2047 than we are to 1997.
Yep.
And we're not going to Neptune anytime soon.
Leave it alone, guys. We don't need to go to Neptune.
We need healthcare before
right,
Neptune.
Seriously. Right. Maybe free college education. Like, let's just try something else.
And your letterbox list is nu metal horror.
AKA Sean.
1994 to 2005, grimy dark visual approach, metal aesthetic, self-loathing and angry sensibility. Nu metal on the soundtrack is a huge plus, but not required. Bride of Chucky, Event Horizon, multiple Crow films,
nice.
Disturbing Behavior, End of Days, Dracula 2000.
Absolutely a vibe.
Yeah.
Jason X.
Oh yeah,
man, this is so much better than Jason X, and I truly appreciate Jason X, but
Jason X is Jason in space.
Yes.
Okay.
Jason in Space.
I think that's the only one I haven't seen now.
Oh, it's worth it. It's terrible. But just there's so many stupid, delightful moments in Jason X that so worth it. If you want this movie, but if every decision had to be stupid, Jason X. Obviously, this is my kind of thing. I started at a 75. Mm-hmm. I then added an automatic 5-point River of Blood bonus. You got a River of Blood? I'm giving you another 5 points. And 2 points for the Prodigy's funky shit as the credit song. Mm. What? I didn't know there was a perfect place for the song Funky Shit by the Prodigy, but it's immediately after watching Event Horizon. So I land on 82. Oh, now, man. Here are some lower numbers.
Good God, 82.
Wow, that is.
I love this movie.
That is, wow.
I love this movie.
I am glad for you.
I know it. I'm happy for you.
This was made in a lab for you.
Mm-hmm. 57.
Yeah.
I came in here at 43.
I know I'm above water, but like barely. I'm going to say 50. No, you know what? I'm going to give it a bonus point for Richard T. Jones scooting his way back. That one, somebody gets busted out the airlock and comes back and it makes sense.
All right.
Good for him. So 40 or 53.
Obviously, I elevated that a bit. 64. 64 is your result for Event Horizon. I feel fine about that.
Yeah.
Although now I'm going back. If we had, of the three options I gave, if you didn't listen to the last episode, I kind of hinted at what my choices were and we landed on Event Horizon. The other two that I had in the pool were Inland Empire and Texas Chainsaw. I feel like Inland Empire would have had a better score because I probably would have given it 98 or something.
Wow.
Right. And Robin would have been very high. Around 80, yeah.
But I think that, I know you don't want to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think Texas Chainsaw would have been an 80 from the panel because it's just too good.
Me? You think me?
I think if we really watched Texas Chainsaw, I would give it in the mid-90s, Camila would be in the mid-80s, and you'd be like a 70, 72.
Okay. I'm reading the book Popcorn Disabilities, which is about representation of disabled people in movies by Kristen Lopez. And literally this morning, I was reading her saying that the worst disabled representation in the history of cinema is in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
In the history of cinema? I feel like there's worse.
He's in there. Like, there's a character in a wheelchair, and like, he doesn't have a great time, but, like, he's still... There's a character in a wheelchair as a normal character in a movie in 1975. Right. Like, what's... I'm not reading the book. What is her argument?
Oh, I don't have it in front of me. I'll send you a picture.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a movie we didn't watch. So what's the point? To the bingo card, we got nothing.
Nothing.
Next time.
Yeah. And we have a new board, and it won't change unless someone exercises their veto later on.
That's right.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Do we start with me and Camila talk Scream 7 or Robin talk The Bride?
I think Scream 7 came out first. Also, I wouldn't mind taking a restroom stop. And so you two talk about it. I think this is the way we should do this.
Yeah.
Spoiler zone. Spoiler alert. They are going to speak freely.
Oh, are we?
I'm taking my headphones off. We're putting a timer on.
Okay.
How do we feel about that?
Okay.
And then also, this will be unedited. So your ums and your ahs are for posterity.
Okay.
5 minutes spoiler. If you are a listener, just go forward. 5 minutes from now.
5, 4, 3.
You didn't say 2 or 1.
Oh, you don't say 2 or 1.
Why not?
You just don't, okay? Now, it goes...
5, 4, 3.
Could have just been Stew.
Yes.
That would have been great.
Yes, okay, so I saw a thing. Okay. I had a lot of fun.
What the hell?
I had so much fun with Stew being there. I think I said before, like, the scream I'm going to scrum, that would happen because I actually did yelp, like, when he showed up. And so my thing is, and it has always been, like, okay, so is the AI, sure, but how would this person, who wouldn't have footage of Stu to make an AI like that, and who would know that what Stu said to Sydney that night other than Stu and Sydney? I always had a thing for you, Sid.
Yeah. And looking like he's 55.
Right. with the scars.
As does everybody, you know, when we see AI Laurie Metcalf and AI Scott Foley, mm-hmm. and even AI David Arquette, 4 years, right. 5 years older, it's I understand that's a leap of faith, mm. but like if you're going, you know what, why we don't have to take that leap of faith? If it's just Stu, right. like I don't know why they're so obsessed with every time it's someone you didn't expect. Well, sometimes that just means it's unsatisfying.
Right. Like these two randos out of fucking nowhere. Like it was just like, it's not, like you're just pulling some random people off the street just to be Ghostface. Like three randos, I guess.
Yeah.
And we had the story there. It was there. He was a wanderer, or like he was a drifter, and we called him John Doe. And it's like, yes, yes, let's keep this up. And then like,
And we're not stretching here. I texted Camila 4 days before the movie came out because I was sitting right there watching the first one, and I double checked when that TV mm-hmm. is dumped on his head until the shot ends, he's still breathing.
Yeah.
We never see anything to suggest that Stu is dead, and he's in Scream 2, which is literally the first line of Scream 7 is a reference to that. They were going to do this with Scream 3. This was the original plot line for Scream 3. It's not like, we can't do that. Right. That would be... Yes, you can.
Yes, absolutely.
And you didn't just so that, like, you kept us guessing and the solution was... It's Anna Camp and Ethan Embry, like, who were in this movie for a combined 8 minutes before they were revealed as the killers. Right?
And they have no real connection to anybody. So Anna Camp, she bought the book, loved her life. Like, it just, it was just make. I read a fan theory today that Stu is alive and that they're mm-hmm. holding on to this to bring him back in 8. So he actually was alive, and that he's going to be in 8. And so I don't know.
So now I have to hope for this for another right. 3 years.
Exactly.
And probably get disappointed again. It's the I said to maybe on the show or maybe just to Camila after 6, in every Scream sequel, 2 through 6. The killer is a person who's never been in a Scream movie before who is related to someone who has.
Yes.
And that was frustrating because it was always that. Mm. And now it's even worse because now that we have another point of data, it's the killer is always a vaguely famous person who's new.
Yep.
Oh, it's the chick from Pitch Perfect.
Yeah. Oh, it's Ethan Embry.
Must be him. God. Oh, it's Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah.
Or Dylan McDermott.
Dylan McDermott.
Dermot Mulroney.
Dermot.
Whichever one it was, it's let's be positive now.
Yes. It's a fun time.
I hated it. It's a fun time. I loved Gail finally getting the interview with Sydney.
Yes.
Mason and what's the actress?
Oh,
name?
I forget.
She's so good.
I love the twins so much.
Love them. Yeah, I mean, until I was mad at the ending. You know, we're having a good time in there. I might still see it again because I'm obsessed with Scream, and yeah. I want to, now that I know I'm not going to get what I want.
I know, right?
I want to go back and try to watch it without that anticipation.
Jasmine Savoy Brown, that's her name.
Jasmine Savoy Brown is so good.
Yeah.
And you know, it has a lot of moments. I really love the opening too. The opening is fantastic.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was great.
But
which would have made so much more sense to me had it. It had been Stu that he would have been the one to burn down his house. Like, why would the other two care? Like, why?
That's 5 minutes. Robin, come back.
Come back.
Come back.
Hello. We had it out of our system.
No more spoilers. What did you give it on Letterboxd, Camila? Because I still had to go positive.
Yeah, I did go positive, too. And my, what did I do? I gave it a 4, but my... Okay. My actual review was, don't get it twisted. My rating is for the level of fun I had watching the movie and working through the theories, the motive. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
I gave it a 3. I am still one of the positive, you know, the fans are so mad at the critics.
Yeah.
Don't come at me. I still voted fresh because I think it's, you know, I think it's worthwhile and it's a fun time and it made a lot of money and great. And I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep going every time.
Yeah.
You know, if they do 20 of them, I'm going to be at everyone. I'm reading a great book right now called Your Favorite Scary Movie which is a really well-researched history. Beautiful.
This is the year I finally went ahead and bought the a Scream mask.
Mm-hmm. That's great. If you're a fan, you have to read your favorite scary movie. She talked to everybody and goes through every film.
Oh, wow.
Gives, you know. So, Robin.
Well, I want to quickly interject that I used that time to read Roger Ebert's review of Event Horizon. And I'm going to argue it is a negative review. It is 2 stars out of 4.
Okay.
But he says, I love this kind of movie, and he describes, you know, it being like Alien. And then he says, I liked all of that stuff, but there wasn't much substance beneath it. And then the other thing to note is that he compares it to the original Solaris.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I don't know. It's a marginal case, 2 out of 4 stars. But Camila, you are,
I'd say that,
as always, the judge of bingo.
I'd say that's a poor review.
Does that give you a bingo?
Not me, but I'm getting ready to check y'all's cards in a minute here. You guys want to talk about Bride while I sort
this
out?
Very good call. Sure. Very good call. Okay.
I'll let you. You've been sidelined for 7 minutes, so I will let you lead.
Well, I've just been dying for the last 12 hours or so to hear what you think about it, John, as your most anticipated film of the year and as something I found deeply Sean-coded.
Yeah, I loved it. What, am I not gonna?
No, so did I, is the thing. And I kind of can't believe how much I liked it. Shout out to Raina Deerwater, who I see every Thursday night at the Arcade Comedy Theater Hotspot because she's another one of the house team coaches. And every Thursday night she says, what movie did you see today? And I tell her. And when I mentioned I saw The Bride, exclamation point, The Bride! She said, oh, Joker for white women. And whenever people say white women, they mean derogatory. And I mean, we're both white women, but still. I think that the big distinction I'm going to draw between this and Joker is that this movie is fun instead of dour. And this movie doesn't take itself too seriously. Mm-hmm. But my initial reaction on Blue Sky was a picture of Jordan Peele in that Key and Peele sketch about Gremlins 2. It's in the movie.
Could there be a female gremlin?
Lipstick, boobies, bitch, you have me a little gremlin, but JJ, I love it so much that it's not only in the movie, but it's definitely in the movie. There's no backseats on that one, no penny taxis. Yes, 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 in the movie, done. That's why we need a woman in the writer's room. Next.
Because it was like, no one ever said no to anything. Just every idea, like every possible flex was flexed. And some of those choices I didn't love. I don't really get the possession bit other than a cover for a wandering accent. With all due respect to soon-to-be Academy Award winner Jesse Buckley, that was weird. And
I think they're just, I think that was like, my guess is they were like, well, in The Bride of Frankenstein, Elsa Lancaster plays both Mary Shelley and the bride. We have to do that again. What would be the weirdest way we could make that happen? Good, it's in the movie.
It's in the movie, done.
It's in the movie is the whole thing of The Bride. Is it Lancaster? I thought it was Lanchester.
I think it's Lancaster, but I could be wrong.
I would trust you before me.
Yeah.
Even though she is a multiple Academy Award nominee. Jesse Buckley's great. Mm-hmm. Annette Bening is great. Jeannie Berlin is great. I put her on my long list for featured performer for the Pittsburgh Film Critics Association Awards. Christian Bale, even though he seems to be in a different movie than everyone else, I liked what he was doing. I like going to such great lengths to roast your brother as a cornball.
But he was still kind of good.
No, he was good. He got the assignment. And boy, do I want to do that makeup. If I was sweaty before we recorded, I would have done that makeup.
You were right. It was Lanchester. The only thing that is holding me back to a 9 rather than a 10 is there's just a lot in there, as you said.
It's a mess. It is a beautiful mess.
Including like a lot of plot. Like what no one will ever mention when talking about this movie is that like 40 minutes of it is a subplot about two detectives. Looking for the bride and Peter Sarsgaard and Penelope Cruz, who do well, but like they're detectives who are hunting down the bride and the monster.
It's a different movie shoved in.
That has nothing to do with nothing, and that doesn't need to be there.
I kind of enjoyed it.
It was still fun.
Yeah.
And I did like the possession thing. I thought they over-explained it a little bit. Like, literally, this movie begins with her saying, I, Mary Shelley, am going to possess this person now who I am also writing at the same time. Like, it's like, no, just do that and have that be the thing and have us argue about whether or not that was the thing you were doing.
I want it to make a scotch more sense.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at.
It's so much fun. The cast is so good. It looks so good. And I wouldn't have thought like, oh yeah, put them in 1930s mobland Chicago. And yet perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't remember a time. I mean, it happens. I can't tell you the last time I smiled as uncontrollably as when the band started playing Puttin' on the Ritz.
I was just going to say, I'm like, I don't know if I want to spoil that, but that was truly the moment that I thought, it's in the movie.
Yeah, like...
like, somebody Maggie Gyllenhaal was like, what if we had them dance to Puttin' on the Ritz? And everybody was like, yes!
I said it on the radio this morning too. So I'm like, I'm willing to spoil this because I think it will make the right people want to see the movie more.
Exactly. This is what you're in for. And that is what you're in for.
I mean, I think the way that I put it is she is having a stream of consciousness conversation with every Frankenstein movie ever made.
Yes.
And like, she is referencing things and like bringing things up and exploring thoughts, but then making her own points. And I love that. I love Frankenstein stuff, but like, I especially love it here.
And as much as it sometimes felt like a different movie, making Frankenstein obsessed with cinema helps that how this movie's in conversation with old timey cinema work.
Yeah. I am entirely satisfied. I do need to see it again because it lost me a little in the back half. But I really want to see it again. There's a Letterboxd list in my brain that is incomplete. And it's basically movies that are having a great time and don't give a fuck whether you're paying attention or not. The thing this reminded me most of is Wild at Heart, partially because it's like two doomed lovers on a road trip being weird.
That's such a good comparison, though. Like, vibes-wise and nonsense-wise, and just we're going to follow tangents where we want to.
I started listing them in my review. I was like, this is somehow related to Wild at Heart, Dark City, Damien Chazelle's Babylon, Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby. Like, there's a category of films that are like, we're doing a thing, get on board or don't. And I love that. It was great. I'm very, very satisfied.
I will say, you know, I come in, my priors are loving Maggie Gyllenhaal's previous work. So, like, I do think that if this movie were directed by a man, I might have gone like this and crossed my arms, crossed my chest, and been grumpy about it, but it wasn't.
Well, you'd have Babylon, and you weren't crazy about Babylon.
Babylon is one of those movies where it's just hit Netflix again, and I am absolutely going to watch a Good Parts version of it soon, because a Good Parts version of that movie is magnificent. Yeah. The actual movie itself is a...
But highly, highly, highly recommended.
I'm so glad you weren't disappointed. I had this like little moment of like, well, what if he hates it? Because it's kind of a mess. So thank God you didn't.
We're doing a podcast where I chose to watch Event Horizon. I don't mind a mess.
Good point.
Yeah, it's and when I say it's highly recommended, 1 in 10 people who, you know, are going to just not, that runaway train is going to be speeding by and you're not going to jump on. And that's fine.
I think it's like 3 in 10, 4 in 10. I think this is one of those movies where I'm like, you might not like it and you're not wrong to not like this.
Yeah, but yeah. I love it.
Me too.
That's about all I saw. We talked about Scream 7.
Can I talk about my little trip?
Yes.
All right, I have one more movie.
Oh, yes, please.
Five Nights at Freddy's Part 2. All right, as you were. I was on a...
Noted.
I'm on a Lillard high, and I'm just, like, trying to, like, you know, like eat up all of Lillard's on-screen performances.
You know what I'm looking forward to? My coworker Kylie Thomas, who's a big horror fan, was asking me what I think of, oh God, what's his name? The Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, Midnight Mass.
What the fuck is his name?
Mike Flanagan. Thank you. And I've never watched any of
those really?
Shows. One, because I don't watch a lot of series,
right.
But I just never dove in on any of those. He is working on a mini series of Carrie.
That's right.
And Matthew Lillard is going to be the principal.
Yes.
So I'm like, okay, now here we go.
You should really watch the house haunt. I don't know.
Yeah.
One of them you should watch.
I should. I should watch a lot of things.
Sean, describe to me your reaction when Camila said the other day, should I watch Twin Peaks The Return? Did you have to grab onto something?
You know, fear. Because it's like, I need her to like this. There's so many things that the people I care about can like or not like, but like it's such a part of my soul that I'm like, this is a big,
that's a big deal.
This is a stressor. This is just a literal stressor. This information.
It's like bringing your significant other to meet your parents kind of thing.
Right. So we'll talk more.
Okay.
I'm going to present you several plans.
Okay.
And you know what? Don't Bother is one of them, you know, so
appreciate it.
I just finished a Return rewatch the other night. Oh. And it's still, you know, it still gives me a lot of feelings.
Okay. I see that last moment in my head as you say that.
I guess based on when this is dropping, and this is like mostly confirmed, if you're in Pittsburgh, come down to the Kamen Science Center on Friday night, March the 20th, where I'll be at the Rangos Giant Cinema, which is a fantastic, gigantic screen, as the title says, introducing Eraserhead.
Oh, so wow.
A lot of my Lynch feelings out on that evening.
Nice.
How is that going to look on a giant screen, though?
It intimidating.
Yeah. Okay. With
I've
all
seen,
due respect,
I've seen
yeah.
it on the big. Yeah. It'll be something. All anyway, right. Robin took a trip.
I took a little trip. So my niece Gia, who lives in Pasadena, had her quinceañera last weekend, which was a wonderful, wonderful event. But I came out a day early, Colin and I did, so that I could go to the Academy Museum.
Fantastical. Mm-hmm.
And it was so great. I was literally shaking as we walked in the building. And I was like, there's two things that are going to happen. One, I'm going to love this as much as I possibly can, or I'm going to be horribly disappointed. Do you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And it was, I loved it as much as I possibly
love
could.
That.
The only disappointing thing was the gift shop, because like, can a bitch get a tote bag?
They didn't have any tote bags.
They didn't have any tote bags. And they had like two t-shirt designs, one of which I am wearing.
Oh, nice.
That's great.
It says, I'd like to thank the Academy. And I did get y'all little prizes, which I'll bring to our next recording. The exhibits there, it's not so much about the Oscars, it's about movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they had a Jaws exhibit, which, Sean, if that tours, you gotta go. You have
oh,
to go.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I told Sean, I was like, I am resisting the urge to send you a picture of every single thing in this exhibit. I said, why would you resist that urge?
Exactly. Please do.
I'm waiting.
They've got the little boat with actual props, wow. including an actual beer can, the actual fishing pole, wow. the actual fighting chair. They've got a little place where you can sit in the booth that they talk about their scars.
Oh my
they have
goodness.
A rig set up so you can take your own dolly zoom.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting for me because Colin said, who invented this? And I was like, no big deal. Alfred Hitchcock. They've got so many, because the thing about Jaws is that they did not know it was going to be a hit. And it was such a fraught shoot that everybody had like trauma from it, and then it hit so hard and so quickly that basically there's a ton of correspondence being like, well, thank fucking God. And boy do I love a little bit of Hollywood correspondence. My favorite thing in the entire museum is probably a telegram from Audrey Hepburn to Katharine Hepburn after one of her Oscar wins,
oh,
saying wow. the real Hepburn won, but Audrey was the happiest. I paid the 10 extra bucks so I could pick up an Oscar. we'll put the video on our Instagram. It was magical. One of the temporary exhibits that I also loved was about, oh God, I should have written down their names, the production designers for Anna Karenina and Barbie, which are literally, I didn't know it was the same people. Those are literally my two favorite production designs of this century. Huh. And if you've never seen Anna Karenina, it's not even that great, but it is set up like it's a stage play. Mm. Like they move the sets as the movie goes on, and it works incredibly well. And then Barbie, you know how great Barbie is. They had so many props from Barbie with like being a little bit too big for everything and props that you didn't even see on screen that have like little in jokes. They have a model of the city and it's like, did you know that at Barbie Cinema, they're playing The Wizard of Oz? Now I do. You know what I mean? I had such a good time. What a great museum. Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
What's the permanent collection like? Because you sent me some of the Jaws stuff, and then you were talking about that. But what if I don't make it for another year, and I'm probably not going to, what's the stuff that's always there?
So I'm actually not 100% clear on what is always there, but I will say that, like, the last thing we did intentionally was, like, the Oscars history, right, where they have a hall of different statuettes that have been donated back to the Academy, including Kehe Kwan's. He had it for less than a year.
Wow.
He had it for less than a year, and he was like, I'd rather people look at this.
Aw.
Isn't that so...
Buddy.
Right? I'm getting choked up. And then they have this room where they just play different acceptance speeches, like notable, like, you know, the first Indigenous winner and, you know, all sorts of landmark wins and good acceptance speeches. And then that they have the little correspondence, and they had the one thing, I guess, also that I wish I had seen more Academy fashion. They had like three or four things. They had Sharon Stone's coat dress from when she ruined her gown. Do you know that story? One year Sharon Stone was presenting and something happened to her gown as it was being transported.
Oh.
And so her stylist had to improvise using her closet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she wore this like coat as a gown. Anyway, so they had that. They had an Elizabeth Taylor gown, but they had that. And then another permanent exhibit, which was actually added to the museum after it opened because of controversy, is about the Jewish founders of Hollywood. And that was pretty cool because there's a documentary that they show like in one of the corners, which was extremely well done. And then they also just have like this really informative timeline of which studio is which and when they merged and all of that stuff. And I don't want to talk about this too much, but I did hear about Paramount theoretically winning the Warner Brothers merger in the lobby as we were leaving.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Which was a weird experience. Yeah. But I had this perspective of like, oh, studios live and die, you know?
So long story short, Robin's moving to LA and going to work at the Academy Museum.
Oh, my God. If I lived there, I'd be working there. Oh, my God. Can't even begin to tell you. Also, the restaurant is good.
Oh, nice. They have a restaurant. Cool.
Yeah. It's called Fanny's, named after Fanny Bryce.
Was the Oscar you held real?
It has never been awarded to anyone, but yes.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay.
So it is the exact
replica or duplicate or
structure and dimensions of an Oscar, but it is not somebody's Oscar.
Correct. And also legit heavy.
Wow. Okay.
It's 8.5 pounds. That's heavier than you think. I'm getting slightly hypomanic because I was so excited by that. But can we briefly talk about the Oscars? This is our last episode before the Oscars.
Oh, sure.
And is it this weekend?
They're this coming Sunday on the
daylight
15th.
Savings. So you can go to the next
show. No, that's this Sunday.
Oh.
Yeah.
This Sunday as this the listeners Sunday.
Gotcha. Correct. I just want to remind everyone that more than one movie is allowed to be good. Because during the SAG Awards, I was on Blue Sky and people were so weird about like Amy Madigan winning a SAG Award. And I'm like, how can you be mad about this? Like, Wunmi Wasako was my vote in our awards. But like, how can you be mad about that? Come on. And then somebody was talking about how Timmy's kind of been mouthing off recently. And I said something like, I like this for Michael B. Jordan. And then somebody replied to me like, well, actually, I think Wagner Mauer is going to win or he's going to be the spoiler. And I was like, no. If Wagner Mauer wins an Oscar, there will be a Robin-shaped hole in the Airbnb that we're staying in. Because I will lose my mind with joy. So, like, it's just the most wide open Oscars in memory.
Yeah.
I will say, I really hope I lose my beer bet with Sean. I do hope Sinners wins Best Picture because it is a great movie and people will hate whatever beats it for all time. And more than one movie's allowed to be good.
Yeah.
I can't tell if I feel the Sinners win or if I just want it that much.
Right.
But I agree with Robin. There are categories where I love the Sinners option. It's not just 16 categories. It's like all but one of the categories where it could possibly be nominated. Mm. Like, it's just Best Actress.
Who would be Best Actress?
Yeah. But I mean, in theory, it's right. Competing in that, right? Haley Steinfeld, I guess.
Oh, is she going to miss the Oscars because she's so pregnant?
She missed something recently, didn't she?
The SAG Awards, yeah.
That's a problem.
Or the Actor Awards.
But, like, that's the only... So it's not for adapted screenplay because it's not adapted.
Right,
it's
exactly.
Not up for animated feature. Mm. Like, actress is the only category.
People are going to be mad on Blue Sky when it loses animated feature.
Right, exactly. But
they're going to be like, there's that animated sequence at the beginning.
as much as, like, you know, I won't be mad if Sinners win cinematography, but I want Train Dreams to win cinematography because I want Train Dreams to win something, and that seems like the most likely shot.
I want a woman to win a Best Cinematographer.
Is Train Dreams a female cinematographer?
No. That's why I want Sinners to win.
Is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And also deserves. So, but no, Train Dreams is such a beautiful movie and incredible that it's digital. Like, unbelievable.
And what you said about Amy Madigan, like, yeah, I'll be happy if Wunmi Misako wins. I'll also be happy if Amy Madigan wins. That's the nice thing. There's a lot of categories where I'll be happy about multiple winners. That said, that also means that there's a clear path where I'm angry about everything. Mm. Like, it's absolutely possible that this goes like one battle wins picture and director, Timmy wins, Stellan Skarsgård wins, and I'm just like, everyone goes to one where I'm like, like, that could happen, and I don't want it to, but I'm really excited. I think Sinners is going to win enough that I feel good about it.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a number of, you know, people I really am happy to have Oscars now.
Right. Well, and we are hoping to release a bonus episode with our little voice notes that we're going to send to each other because we are all watching different places this year. So, like we did for the Parasite Oscars. So hopefully we'll have that out shortly after the ceremony. And enjoy.
Yay.
I will be wearing I bought a Sinners t-shirt.
Oh, so nice.
I'll be wearing that on Oscar day in hope. I bought it at Horror Realm Con. We've gone too long. I can't go into it, but I had a great time at Horror Realm Con doing Q&As with Jeffrey Kramer from Jaws. I met somebody from Jaws.
Nice.
Who, you know, you would know him immediately on seeing him. He's the deputy in Jaws. His role is even bigger in Jaws 2. He's also the motorist in Clue. He's also in Halloween 2. He has a bunch of Emmys as a producer on The Practice and Ally McBeal.
Oh, wow.
He was so great. And I only bring it up to say, if you go to a con, go to more of the Q&As.
Yeah.
The people who you want to get a photo with will be there later. And this was, I'm talking to a person who is in the motion picture Jaws. And there were like 10 people there because they put it at 11 a.m.
Oh, jeez.
And like people were still filing in. And everyone, when they go to a con, the first thing they do is get in line for the person they really want to meet. And I get that. But like, they'll be there later. Like, do the programming.
Yeah.
Like, see this stuff. But he was great. And then William Catt from Carrie and Greatest American Hero and House did that later. And I told him he was in my wedding because we danced to the Carrie dance in my wedding. Horror Realm Con does a great job, and they've got a great new venue closer to the city. So if you're in Pittsburgh, go next year. Anything else?
Nope.
Got to draw a movie?
Hooray.
It's just regular times. Regular draws through till spooky season until we...
Unless somebody wins a buttload of veto or, yeah, buttload of bingos.
Unless we decide a Little Treat Film Festival, which I don't want to do right now, but it feels
summer.
Like...
It's like, it feels like a summer gig.
I like that idea.
Yeah, sometime this
maybe
summer.
Around the 4th.
Yeah.
America's 250th birthday means we just watch more movies than we know.
So patriotic.
Well, it's time to talk about feelings. It's time to feel our feelings. It's time to be our feelings. It's time to watch Inside Out from 2015.
Oh, yeah, very good. I've seen that movie like 872 times.
Okay. I'm like low-key feeling a veto.
Really?
Really.
so many.
You're looking
people.
At the board.
Mm-hmm. I have it, but no, I should save it.
Really? You sure?
No. All right,
why were you feeling it? Talk us
so
through
it. So many people told me when that movie came out, like, oh, you have mental health issues. Have you seen Inside Out? And then I saw it. I was like, come the fuck off. With all due respect to everybody who likes that movie, we've also done a ton of Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
I like the movie, fine.
Great. Because like I said, like because I have a kid, I've seen it way too many times.
Yeah. All right, veto.
Yay.
Exercise my veto, man.
Please be good.
Interesting use of a veto.
It is.
I mean, those are very legitimate reasons. Mm-hmm. But will we get burned? Because as we know, now we are stuck with... You just traded Pixar for Marvel. It's such a lateral move. I guarantee you haven't revisited this one yet. It's Avengers Age of Ultron.
Okay.
All right.
The one we forget about.
Yeah. I'm sure we can find something to talk about.
We could talk about possibly the climax of my interest in the MCU and sort of where I was like, okay, I guess maybe not.
We haven't done an Avengers movie as much as...
Oh, we haven't?
We did Guardians 2 and we did Ant-Man and we did...
Did we do Thor?
We've done an Iron Man.
We've done an Iron Man, but we have not done an Avengers movie. And we're coming up on the first Avengers movie in 7 years later this year. Yeah. So
thanks, Tony. Sure.
Great.
I think this was the right call for me.
I feel like it's much more fun to talk about than our feelings.
What's his name? What's Richard Kine's name? Bing Bong? I didn't need to get sad about Bing
Bong.
Exactly.
This
is fine.
Yeah.
This is fine. Back to the MCU, it's ramping back up. We got a Spider-Man and never mind. Event Horizon released not a number Nomia, August 15th of 1997. What was the number one song in America?
Candle in the
Mariah Carey.
Neither of those.
Really?
Oh, okay.
Camila is closer, but not for the reason you'd think.
So it's not a song about candles?
I mean, it's not like Elton John had another number one that year.
Why do we have that song?
As a Diana.
Who else died?
Oh, I'll Be Missing You.
Oh.
It's I'll Be Missing You.
Oh, that was so dark. What a dark clue.
It was a dark clue. Number one.